Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
This morning we are wrapping up a series that we've called Twisted. And what we're doing is we're looking at some commonly misused, misquoted verses from the Bible, verses that are taken out of context, made to mean something that they don't really mean. And in your on the back of your bulletin today are your message notes, so you can go ahead and turn that around, take that out, and just kind of keep track of what we're saying. It'll help you flow and follow. But as we get started, I want to ask a question. How many of you would say that if you had a little bit more money, it would make life easier for you? It'd make life better for you. Raise your hand. How many would say, if I had just a little bit more, it'd make it easier or better? Raise it high. Several hands up. Yeah, be honest. How many say, I could use a little more money? That would be helpful. Okay, great. Well, that verse is going to lead us into one of the most misquoted verses today. I can't tell you how many times I have heard this verse misquoted. I heard it misquoted this morning in my office as we were praying for the service, okay? It is so easy for this to quote, and it's found, how many have ever heard people say, money's the root of all evil? How many ever heard that? Uh-huh. There is a tip jar in a coffee shop, and it says, money is the root of all evil, cleanse yourself here. That's pretty creative, isn't it? Yeah. You want to get holy? Give us your money, you know. But then that makes you more evil, you know. But yeah, it's great. And what this is a misquote from 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. And this is what it says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Paul didn't say money is the root. He said the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Now, you might be sitting here today thinking, you know what? I'm in good shape because that's not me. I don't love money. I'm not some, you know, rich, greedy person that just wants more, more, more. I'm in good shape, okay? And you might be thinking that, but here's a question. How do we know if we love money or not? How do we know if we love money? Well, we have good news. The Bible's very clear. It's in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, and this is what it says. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. Now, I set you up earlier by asking how many of you would say, I could handle a little bit more money. It would make things easier. It would make things nicer. And many of us raised our hand, including myself. And here's the thing. If we love money, then my income right now is not good enough. I want more. But where I'm at right now, I want more than what I've got. That's what Solomon wrote, one of the wisest men in the world. He says, that's the indicator if you love money, if you want more. How much more do you need? Someone once asked John Rockefeller, how much money is enough? And then Rockefeller was a millionaire. You know what he said? Just $1 more. And that's kind of the human condition. A lot of us say, well, if I just had a little bit more money. Do you remember when you got your first job, and maybe it was minimum wage or a very low-paying job, and you thought, if I just got this job or got this promotion or made this amount, then I'd be happy. And then you got to that place, you got to that stage, and it wasn't long, and it's like, you know what? If I just had this job or got this promotion now, if I just got this pay bump, then I'd have enough money. How many remember being like that? I can remember that way. And here's the thing about the human condition. Our flesh is never satisfied. It always wants more. And so if we've got the love of money, we're always going to find out that we are not satisfied. In your notes, whoever loves money is not satisfied with what he or she has. And the thing is that we have to realize here is that God wants us to come to a place where we are content with what he has given us. Now, we've been talking the past few weeks about when Scripture's misquoted, how do we find the accurate meaning? And one of the things we've talked about is to look at the context. The context of 1 Timothy chapter 6 is this is one of the pastoral epistles. Paul wrote three letters to young pastors, two pastors, Timothy and Titus. And you have to realize these pastors, these men, were like sons to him. They weren't biological sons, but he raised them in the faith. He nurtured them. He really loved these guys. And so as he's writing these books to them, he's doing two things. He's saying, hey guys, this is how you need to live. Sons, listen up. This is what it takes to live. This is what I want you to do. And as pastors, this is what I want you to teach your people. These are the things that your people need to know. And so keep that in mind as we're going to work through the context of 1 Timothy chapter 6. Now, verse 10 is the verse that's misquoted, but for us to get the context, we need to start out in verse 6, okay? And verse 6 says, godliness with contentment is great gain. And that word gain in the original language, it means a great acquisition. It referred to the getting and the acquiring of money. And so Paul says, if you want a big gain, if you really want to acquire a lot of what you would think of money, a lot of prosperity, a lot of riches, Paul says, if you want to strike it big, godliness with contentment. If you want to strike it big, if you want to hit a great investment, if you want to, man, just knock out the jackpot, godliness with contentment. That is the key. It is great gain. Not a small gain, but it is great gain. And really, this teaching that Paul is giving isn't so much on money. It's more about godliness. Because if you jump down to verse 11, this is what Paul says. He says, your goal is to pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. Paul's saying, guys, this is what you want to pursue in life, is getting closer to God. And if you've got contentment with your godliness, you have an incredible gain, the best gain you can ever have. Okay, let's jump back to verse 7. And this is what Paul said. He said, we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain, say certain, it is certain we can carry nothing out. How many of you know that's true? Yeah, when someone dies, you don't see a moving van back up to their house and you load up everything in the house and then that moving van gets onto the highway of heaven, trucking down the road with Michael Landon up to that highway of heaven and drops off all their goods up in heaven. Their goods are either dispersed among family and friends or they're sold at an auction for a very little fraction of what you paid for them. You see, Paul is saying here, and take a look in your notes, this is what Paul is saying, you can't take it with you. So it shouldn't be a priority. You can't take it with you, so it shouldn't be a priority. It's like the story I heard one time of a gentleman who was very rich, he was elderly, and he discovered that he had a terminal disease, that he was dying, and he says to his wife, okay, I want to take this with me, so I want you to go to the bank, withdraw thousands and thousands of dollars, and stuff it in a pillowcase, and put it upstairs in the attic so that as I go, I can grab it on the way out, okay? Fill it as full as you can with the biggest bills you can. And so she does that, and you know, a few days later, the man dies, and she's thinking, oh, I'm going to go upstairs and check it. And she gets up to the attic, the pillowcase is still there. And she says, that fool, I knew I should have put it in the basement. You can't take it with you, whether you're going up or going down. And therefore, Paul says, it shouldn't be a priority. We brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. You came in naked. You weren't even born with clothes on. And when you go out, you're not taking the clothes with you. We come in empty-handed. We leave empty-handed, okay? Let's take a look at verse 8. Paul goes on to say, and having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. Okay, let me ask you this. Do we really believe that? Are we content with just food and clothing and an iPhone and, you know, Netflix and high-speed internet and a newer car? No, you know, that's not what Paul says. He says food and clothing. Jesus said food, clothing, shelter. He expanded a little bit. You know, food, clothing, and shelter, the basic necessities of life, with these, we should be content. Some of the happiest people in the world are the people that have the least. I remember when I went on a missions trip to Mexico, I took our youth group. I was a youth pastor in Salt Lake City, Utah. We went to Mexico to build a house for a family, okay? You're thinking, a youth group building a house? That's a scary-looking house, okay? Well, this house was 11 feet by 22 feet. The mom lived in a shack that was about from this part of the stage over to here. That's how big. And their sofa, their kitchen, the refrigerator, her bedroom was in there. They had even a smaller shack where they kept like their tools and a water barrel and just a bunch of stuff. The boys really didn't have anywhere. So we built an 11 by 22 room, and that was their bedroom where the boys were going to live. It was bigger than the other two buildings combined. And when we were down there, I can't tell you the joy and the happiness that so many people had, even though they had so little. You know, and sometimes you hear about people in third world countries, they're so joyful, they're so content, so happy. And yet it doesn't make sense because they have just a fraction of the things that you and I have. In your notes it says, the richest are not those who have the most, but those who need the least. How much do we feel we need? I need this, I need that, I need this, I need that. If we need a bunch of stuff, we're not going to be content. Here's the thing, discontentment makes rich people poor, while contentment makes poor people rich. Contentment is not a matter of how much do you have. Paul wrote to the Philippian church, he's in prison, and he says, I have abounded and I have suffered, but this one thing I have learned, that I can be content in whatever situation I find myself is. Our contentment doesn't come with how much money we have. It comes from how much of Jesus we have. That's where real contentment comes from. And if we're not content, we're always going to feel poor. It's never going to be enough. We're not going to be satisfied. Paul goes on to say in verse 9, but those who desire to be rich, say that with me, those who desire to be rich. Can anyone say Publishers Clearinghouse? Can you say, you know, Powerball? You know sometimes when they bring the Powerball on the newscast, for fun, I just call out six numbers. I do this quite often. I have yet to hit two right, okay? Most of the time, I don't even get one. I mean, you want to play Powerball? Play it without money. Don't waste it and see how lucky you are. You know, it doesn't work. And they say that most of the people that do win it, they're broke within a few years because that love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And this is what Paul says about the love of money. Those who desire to be rich that have that love, it says they fall into temptation and a snare. They're in a trap. They're trapped that closes on them, and they can't get out. And it says it drowns them. They fall into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men. Have any of you ever been in danger of drowning before? Anyone here? Some of you have. I remember when I was in elementary school, I was in swimming lessons, okay? And I was swimming, they wanted us to swim across the part of the pool where it was too deep for us to stand up in because they didn't want us touching bottom, swim across and back, and I'm swimming across, and I get a cramp, and I couldn't move. And I go down once, and I come back up. I'm going, help! And the lifeguard's on deck. You know, it's those chilly mornings, And in the lifeguards, how many of the lifeguards never get in the water with you? They tell you what to do. They show you on land, but they're not going to get in the water. And I go down once, and I come up, and I go, help! And he just looks at me. I go down and go, help! And I go down a third time, and I'm going, I don't know if I'm going to make it again. I come up, help! And I think he must have seen the panic in my eyes. And as I'm going down, which I think is going to be the last time, I see him flip off his flip-flops and whip off his tank top. I don't know how he did it, but it was lightning quick. And as I'm going down, he's diving in the water, and he comes to save me. And I can't tell you, though, the hopelessness and the horror, the fear that I had as I was going down, and it was like, I don't think I'm going to make it. One of the most frightening experiences of my entire life. And Paul says, if you love money, if you say, I just need a little bit more, it will drown you. It will destroy you. Loving money in your notes will destroy you and brings sadness. Verse 10, it says, it pierces them with sorrow because money doesn't satisfy us. Money doesn't satisfy us. How many know someone like that? They've been destroyed because of money. Paul says they've walked away from their faith. How many know someone, they want to be rich? You don't have to raise your hands, but just think about it. They wanted to be rich, and as a result, they walked away from their walk with God. Or they were so consumed on how much they could make that they neglected their marriage, and they ended up getting a divorce. Or maybe there was a situation with money where it caused problems and tensions with the friend, and today they're no longer friends because somebody did someone wrong with money. Or family members, maybe some of you know an inheritance. Someone dies, and now they're squabbling and fighting over who gets what, and they're not talking to each other anymore. And that love of money has brought destruction. It's brought sorrow and sadness into their life. I think many of us know people like that. Now, when we hear this, it sounds like money is bad, but it's not bad. We have to recognize money is not bad, but loving money is bad. It's the love of money that can be so, so dangerous. And we want to get this right because it's kind of a tension here, okay? We want to get this right. Jesus said you cannot serve both God and money. Notice he didn't say God and power, both God and popularity, both God and sex. He said God and money because money is one of the biggest things that has a draw on our heart. And a lot of times in the Christian community, you see one of two extremes when it comes to money. The first one is the prosperity gospel, and that's the belief that if I'm godly enough, if I have enough faith, if I am, if I'm giving enough, then God will make me rich. If I am, strong enough spiritually and mature enough spiritually, if I'm doing it great, then God is going to bless me, guaranteed, no matter what. And sometimes you even hear television preachers, "Well, you just give me your money, and God's going to turn around and bless you and give you a Rolls Royce. He's going to give you whatever you want." Now the problem is, you go and preach that in Africa where they make $2-3 a day, and they're not going to get the Rolls Royce. And we got to be careful because there's a lot of charlatans out there that say, well, if you got enough faith, if you're godly enough, if you love Jesus enough, if you give enough, then you're going to be rich. That's the prosperity gospel, to one extreme. But then you've got the other extreme, the poverty gospel. And the poverty gospel is actually flipped. It says, if you're really righteous, if you're really godly, then you're going to be poor. How many of you ever heard someone say that? Some of you have? Yeah. You're going to be poor. And if you do have money, that means you're evil. That means you're wicked. If you really love Jesus, then you're not going to have anything. The problem with that is it's not biblical. You take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 18, and it says there that you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth. Who gives you the power and the ability to gain money, to gain wealth? God does. So let me ask you this. Is God going to give you something that is sinful? Is God going to give you something that is evil? And the answer is no. If money really was evil, then God wouldn't give it to us. And so both extremes are wrong. And we have to be careful where it's like, well, I'm godly, and so therefore I'm rich, and because you're not godly, you're not rich. Or the person who says, well, I'm poor, and so therefore I'm godly, and because you're rich, you're not godly. Both of them are extremes and are the twisting of Scripture. Because it's not money that's evil, it is the love of money. And you know what? Sometimes when God blesses us financially, I hear people apologizing for that. We shouldn't apologize for the blessings of God. Because there's so many blessings of God we don't apologize for. But what about this? Someone comes to you and says, man, you've got such a great marriage. And do you say, oh, no, no, we don't. We really hate each other. Do you apologize for having a good marriage? Or someone comes up to you and says, man, you've got great kids. Oh, no, we don't. You know, they're horrible. No, you say, we've been blessed. We got a great family. You know, you're 78 and you're in excellent health. And someone says, man, you're in great health. You don't say, well, I've just been lucky. No, I've been blessed. I haven't got diseases. I haven't fallen. When I have fallen, things haven't broken. No, God has blessed me. He's watched over me. But someone comes to you and says, you got a nice house. Oh, well, we got a good deal on it. You know, man, that's a nice car. Well, yeah, it was really on sale. They knocked $10,000. They're trying to move it out of the life. And we apologize for the blessings of God when it comes to finances when we don't do it for anything else. We shouldn't apologize for when God blesses. Just say, yes, God has blessed me. Because money's not evil. Having things is not evil. Prospering and not being in need, that's not evil. But likewise, going through a time of difficulty, like Paul says, hey, I've abounded, I've been poor, but I've learned contentment. Because Paul knew that godliness with contentment is great, great gain. Okay, let's jump down to verse 17, because Paul takes a little detour, talks about other things, but now he gets to verse 17, and he's talking again about this love of money, and Paul says, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, not to be proud or arrogant, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let me throw out a question to you. Now, who are the rich? When he says, command the rich, who are the rich people? A lot of you are sitting here today saying, well, I'm not rich, so that doesn't refer to me. But let's think about this in a global context, okay? Because Paul says, command those who are rich in this present world, in this present world that we live in, who is really rich? I would venture to say that many of you this morning in your pockets hold hundreds of dollars of technology. In fact, that technology is maybe half a year's wage, or in some case, a year's wage in some third world countries. Can you imagine that? 6 months of your wage, or 6 months of some people's wage is right here in your hand. Hold up your smartphone. If you've got a smartphone, hold it up this morning. Come on, get it out, okay? I want you to see this. Say, some of you, well, I got a good deal. I got that Black Friday sale for 10 bucks a month. But it's worth, according to them, I don't think it is, but you know, it's worth $700-$800. Yeah. And we have so much in technology right there. How many of you own your own vehicle? Raise your hand. A lot of you. I read an article that said, if you own a vehicle, that puts you in the top 9% of the wealthiest people in the world. If you own a vehicle, you're in the top 9%. Because remember, there's 7.4 billion people on the planet. And a lot of those people don't have a vehicle, okay? If you own a vehicle, you're in the top... How many of your top 10%ers in the world are here this morning? You're in the top wealthy... I mean, there's a lot of us here. Wow. You didn't realize you were so rich, huh? And you know what we do? We take that top 10 vehicle today after church, and we're going to drive by 5 or 6 restaurants to that special restaurant we want to go to. We get a menu, and we order something that takes us, you know, 10 minutes to decide on because we don't know what we want, and then we complain because it takes 11 minutes to get it for the thing we didn't know what we wanted, and then we drive home in our top 10 vehicle, and we drive our vehicle in its own house. You say, my car is a house? Yes, it's called a garage. At least where I come from, it's called a garage. And we drive it in, and you know what? My garage is bigger than that 11 by 22 foot home that my youth group and I built down in Mexico. And then we walk into our house, but not just any house, a climate-controlled house, where yesterday I was running a little bit cooler air, and today I've got the heater on, and I can make it whatever temperature I want. And then, because I drank so much of that free pop, the unlimited pop, I go pee in a toilet, and my poop goes in a toilet, and it's flushed away, never to be smelled or seen again. And then I sit down on the TV, and I turn it on, and I click, click, click to what I want to watch, or I stream a show, and then I go and eat some more, and then I go to bed. And I get up in the morning, and I walk into my closet, and some of you have a two-story closet, and you're looking through all your clothes, and you say, I've got nothing to wear. I'm not rich. Uh-uh, I'm not rich. This verse doesn't apply to me, because I'm not rich. Friends, I would say almost all of us are rich. We won the lottery when we were born in America. So let's read that verse again with the context that we are rich, okay? Let's read verse 17 again. Paul says, command those who are rich in this present age. Who is that? Say me. Command those who are rich not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but where do we put our trust? Not in a 501k. 401k, not in a 401k, not in the stock market, not in things, but in God. Why? Don't trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Notice that God gives us things to enjoy. If having things, having money was sin, if it was wrong, if having it was the root of all evil, God wouldn't give it to us. But God says, yes, enjoy it. He doesn't say get rid of it. He says enjoy it. Why do we tend to put our trust in money? Here's the thing, and we have it for you, listed in your notes, is that because money promises what only God can provide. Money promises what only God can provide. And that's why Paul says you need to put your hope, need to put your faith, need to put your trust in God, not in your uncertain riches. Because money promises happiness, but how much is enough? If I just have a little bit more, then I'd be happy. Money promises security. How many times have you said, if I just get my car paid off, just get the school loan paid off, you know, then I'll feel more secure. If I just get my credit card paid off, I feel more secure. But you get done, and you still feel, I need more. I need more financial security. Money promises security, but only God provides it. Or what about significance? You drive up to a party to someone's house in a broken-down jalopy car that's rusted out, and you stop, and as you get out, boom, 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 it backfires. And everyone looks out at the window at you, and what do you feel? You know, you feel like that high. But if you pull up in a shiny new car with that shiny new smell, and you've got your designer jeans and your designer purse, your designer glasses, okay, now I'm looking pretty good. Friends, what you put on the outside doesn't change who you are on this inside. What you drive, whether it's a jalopy or whether it's a Rolls Royce, a Lamborghini, or a $50,000 new truck, doesn't make you any more significant and valued. And yet money promises that. We see it all the time. If you just get the new phone, the new car, the new clothes, the new this, the new that, then you will be happy, you will be secure, you'll feel significant. You know, the Beatles had part of it right when they said money can't buy you love, but they could have said, and it doesn't buy you significance, and it doesn't buy you happiness, and it doesn't buy you security, because money promises what only God can provide to you and me. When we really think that if I just had a little bit more, I'd feel better, we're being deceived by the enemy. We don't really need more. We have to trust God. Now, am I saying don't save? No. God tells us to save. Am I saying don't invest? Don't be wise with your finances? Don't be a good steward? No. The Bible tells us to do those things. Because here's the thing. God gives us blessings not so we can keep it and hoard it, but so that we can take it and pass it on to others. In fact, those of us who are rich, we have a responsibility to bless others. That's what Paul taught in verse 18 and 19. Look at what he said. He says, let them, who's the them there? It's the rich people mentioned in verse 17. He says, command the rich not to be arrogant and haughty and trust in uncertain riches. He says, let them do good. And notice, not just a little good, but let them be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share. And the reason is as we do good, as we minister, as we help the needy, as we alleviate poor and suffering, as we do that, as we touch other people, this is what it accomplishes. Verse 19, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come. When is the time to come? It's eternity. That's right. The time to come is eternity. And it's just like what Jesus said, hey, you're laying up treasures in heaven. Why? That they may lay hold on the life that is truly life. The life that is truly life. There are so many people, they're searching for the real life. And friends, when you lay up your treasures for God, this is what Paul is teaching in verse 18 and 19. Live and give richly for eternal causes to find real life right now. Live richly. Give richly for eternal causes, things that are going to outlive you, things that are going to impact souls. If you want to find the real life, real satisfaction, real happiness right now, command those who are rich to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share, and to find the life that really is life.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us casperfaith@gmail.com or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.